Driving In with
Mark
and Easton,
an iHeartRadio and
Zero
Time People's Choice Award-winning podcast.
Hello, everybody. We're scrubbing in.
I was hoping you'd start it that way.
Yeah, it has to. It's tradition. Hey, check it out, everybody. For all of you who have always wanted a scrubbing in with Becca and Tanya, without Becca and Tanya, you got your wish.
It's Mark and Easton running the show without them. And, you know, a show that's all about bringing women together and female empowerment. We thought, why not have the two white guys take over the show and just talk?
That's the perfect ending to 2020.
Exactly.
The year we realized we need more white guys.
Especially white guys in podcasting. That's something that's desperately needed.
Yes, that's right. Oh, man. Well, here we are. You know, let's do it. Let's get started. Easton, how was your Christmas?
It was great. It was really nice. It was just, we didn't go anywhere. We stayed home and we watched movies all day. And it was really low key. Drove around, look at Christmas lights. It was a really nice day, actually.
What did you watch that was particularly fantastic?
Oh, my goodness. We Allison had never seen Home Alone. I hadn't seen it in a really long time, so that was a big highlight for us. We love we've been watching Krampus every year. The one, it came out in like 2015, and it's kind of like a horror comedy movie. We really dug that. I made Allison watch The Holiday because I know Tanya talks about it every year.
And oh yeah,
I remembered really enjoying it in theaters, and Allison watched it and she's like, "Wow, this movie sucks," but. We ended up really enjoying it. Like there were parts that are really cute, and then there's parts that are like laughably dumb. But those were probably the highlights for us.
Well, we got a cabin up in the Lake Arrowhead area, and so that was nice because it was just somewhere to go and not be home, you know? So we just wanted the kids to go do something, and so we did. So that was nice. It was a cute little cabin, and they liked it, and it was different. It was definitely a Christmas to remember.
Did it snow?
No, it's snowing as we speak. I think they're getting a ton of snow up there, but we left on Saturday. But like I said to the kids, I said, because we do the same thing every year. We go to Wisconsin, we see the same people on the same days. And I said, if I asked you your favorite memory of Christmas 2017, you'd have no idea. Yeah. But when I bring up Christmas 2020, you're going to have all these amazing memories. And it was really a great time. We watched, we showed them Christmas Vacation.
All right.
You know, I remember being underwhelmed by that movie a long time ago, and I remain underwhelmed. I know it's a classic, and everybody watches it every year, and my friend Dimitri has literally memorized the entire film. It has some funny moments, but as a whole, I don't know. It's not my favorite.
You know, I consider myself, Vacation is one of my favorite movies of
love
all time.
Love Vacation.
I love it. Like, I have that one memorized, but
yes.
Christmas Vacation, I'm on the same boat. Like, I remember thinking, like, oh man, everyone loves this one, but like I almost like Vegas Vacation more, and that's like one of the bad new ones, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So anyway, so that was fine. I also would like to say that I watched Wonder Woman 84, and I'm apparently one of the few that really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I watched the Bee Gees documentary on HBO Max that I saw everybody talking about, and that was awesome.
Here, that's amazing.
It's amazing. It's really good. And I finished Ted Lasso, which is fantastic. So there you go. So today on the show, we are going to get to something a little bit that people are very excited about and have been talking about for a long time. Our wives are coming on the show.
That's right. They exist. They're real people.
Yes. It involved some arm twisting on my side of things. She is just not interested. She's been on the Sequest show like twice over the years because that's Ryan. That's the boss. That's my job. she'll help out if I need the help. But coming on this and talking about our marriage, it's just not her thing. She doesn't have that desire to be the focus of the focal point. So anyway. But we'll give it a go. We'll see how it goes. In the meantime, we got a lot of questions on the Facebook group that I wanted to address. So I basically took some of the questions that people asked and that got a lot of likes. I figured that was people seconding, like this would be good. So we'll run down some of these. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like Haley Heineman asked, and a lot of people actually asked, how we got into radio, working with Ryan Seacrest, that sort of thing. Where'd you go to school? How'd you end up in LA? That sort of stuff. So I'll go real quick, and then you can go real quick. A long, long time ago, I guess this was 1990, a buddy I went to high school with, his name is Shannon, and we're still friends. We were texting over the holiday. He knew a guy who worked at a radio station who let us use their production studio. It was a Sunday night, and he just let us have the keys, so we kind of had to figure out how to work the equipment. And I recorded a fake demo of me pretending to be on the radio. I remember I talked up, that's a radio phrase, talking up a record, meaning you talk over the intro before they start singing. I talked up Angel of Harlem by U2.
Wow.
And I was on WMRK, right? You get it? Mark Radio or whatever. And I did that. And I don't have it anymore. I kind of wish I did because I bet it's horrendous. But that got me my first job at WMAD in Madison. And there's a direct line from there to Seacrest and scrubbing and all that stuff. So I either owe a debt of gratitude to my friend Shannon or the blame to my friend Shannon that I've been in radio for nearly 30 years. And who knows? I could be so much better off if that had never happened. But here we are.
Did you study radio in school or anything like that?
I studied communication arts in college. It didn't really have any effect one way or another on me getting that job or helping me excel at that job.
Yeah, you know, I had a similar experience. Like I loved radio my entire life, but I always thought that like, oh, that's like saying you want to work in radio. That's like saying like, I want to be Tom Cruise. Like, you know, like that, no one gets to do that.
Right.
You know? So I never even tried. I was taking classes to be a police officer. And then one day I was listening to the radio and I love talk radio. Talk radio was like what really grew my passion for it. And I thought, I'm just going to go to this station, KSCO in Santa Cruz, and just like see if they let me like hang out and like watch them do the show. And I walked in and I was like, hey, can I hang out here? And they said, yes. And I sat and I watched their like afternoon show. And then the news person gave me an obituary for the chancellor for UCSC had just died. And they said, here's her obituary, rewrite this for the radio.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. And like, let's just see what you got. This is the first day. And so I did, because all I did was listen to radio news. So I knew exactly how it was formatted. And I wrote it and they said, okay. And then they gave me like 10 more. And I was there for like 4 hours and I did it. And then they're like, okay, come back for the morning show tomorrow. And then I was an intern and that was it. That was it for me.
Like an unofficial intern? Like you weren't earning college credit or anything? You were just free labor?
Absolutely not. Yeah, they did not do the interns the way you're supposed to, which keeps you from having an army of unpaid workers. But I'm grateful for it because I probably, you know, if I had grown up in like Los Angeles or New York or something, there's no way that could have happened. Like,
yeah.
But so I'm really grateful for that. And I worked there for like 5 years, and then I moved to LA. But
so you were hired eventually.
Yes, yes. I was an intern for a year without making any money, and then I got a. Then one of the news people left, and I became a reporter. And mm-hmm. Then I was making some real dollars at that point.
Real coin, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That leads me to a couple of other questions on here on the radio. Like Sabrina Riggin wanted tips on getting into radio, and she did some college radio, and she's having a hard time getting internships or entry level positions right now. So many people I've talked to, it started from hanging out at the radio station, and I don't know that I recommend that or if that's even possible now. But a lot of people had that happen. I think even Seacrest had that happen, where mm-hmm. you just kind of show up at the radio station and hang out until they kind of give you stuff to do. I got in a lot of trouble once, and I might have told this story before. But the truth is, I don't know how to get into radio these days. And I was addressing a bunch of broadcast students who came to get a tour of the Seacrest facilities. And they asked me how to get into radio. Well, what I basically told them was, the way I got into radio doesn't exist anymore. You know, you work weekend being on the radio. You know, I did weekend overnights. I did midnight to 6 a.m. I did 2 to 6 a.m. I did 11 to 5 a.m. Because those are the times you can be on and suck and nobody cares because nobody's listening. But there's no longer such a thing as the DJ that's on at 3 o'clock in the morning because those are all pre-recorded, or there's mm-hmm. no DJs nowadays because it's all automated. So what I told them was, I'm not sure how to get into radio anymore. But apparently some of them took it as, don't go into radio. and people got mad at me about that. And so I'm not saying don't go into radio. I'm saying I'm not sure what the path in is anymore. But I do think it's getting your foot in the door any way you possibly can and then making yourself indispensable.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And the thing I always think about is like, you know, you're not going to get an on-air gig like right off the bat, but I think that if you, like the way I got good, because I didn't go to school for this like either, but the way I got good at this was I listened to a bunch of it and then I just like copied what I heard. And these days, like you have a radio studio in your pocket, like the iPhone microphone works. We use it for a ton of podcasts here, you know, like
yeah.
You can record mm-hmm. your own demo tape at home. And, you know, I'm not saying that like, if you send someone a demo tape, they're just going to hire you on the spot, but at least you can like prove that you know what you're doing, or that at least you kind of understand what they're looking for. And then, you know, they might bring you into like, you know, I don't know if street teams are a thing anymore, but like be on the street team and stuff like that.
Not currently, but hopefully they'll be back at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. But making yourself indispensable, man, that's the, cause like I got into Seacrest by being an engineer. I do not have any engineer experience. Like I'm not good at it, but I learned enough and I was able to do the job so that when they needed someone, I was there.
Well, and you should talk more about that, because that's amazing, because you got the job as Ryan's engineer without engineering experience, and now you're the writer-producer of American Top 40 with no writer-producer experience. So you should talk about that, because that's kind of amazing.
That, you know, that's a career pivot I'm very proud of, and I don't know if that's happened before, or at least very few times. When I moved to I wanted to move to LA because I figured I did everything that I could at KSCO in Santa Cruz. I just could not, like, besides owning the station, I couldn't do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for every single job in LA in radio that I could find, every single job. And I got a job at the Network Operations Center for Premier Networks, which is a syndication part of iHeartRadio. And it was like working in a big room where like there's a ton of radio feeds going in and out. I didn't know how to work any of that stuff. But I said that I had a working knowledge of broadcast equipment, which was true.
Yeah, okay.
And by that, I mean, I knew how computers worked and I could, you know, turn the board on and off. And when I was in there, I just, like, I looked around at all the equipment and I just found all the manuals for them and I read them. And then then I knew how they all worked. And eventually...
So nobody taught you? You just taught yourself?
Yeah. Like, they taught me the procedure, you know, they taught me, like, what they do with them, but as far as how they worked and like how to fix them when they break, that's the big one. I just taught myself because we had all the manuals in the room and you're sitting there for 8 hours listening to Rush Limbaugh and The Breakfast Club all day.
By yourself?
There's other people in there, but
okay.
They're off.
Because if something broke during the reading manual process, that could have been kind of catastrophic for your career.
That's true. However, the manual's right in front of you. I mean, you got no better time for something to break than that. Yeah. And so I, you know, I kind of became, my boss when I was there, he used this phrase. He's like, you know, you're that girl, like from that TV show from I think it's from the '60s. If they needed something, like I was just raised my hand. I don't care. Like, I don't know if I didn't know how to do it. I didn't care what it was. If they needed something done, I would just volunteer and then I would figure it out if I didn't know how to do it. So everyone knew that they could rely on me to do it and hopefully do it well. And then when Seacrest, his engineer position opened, I didn't want to apply because I was like, oh God, they need a real engineer for that. Like, that's big time. And Allison, my lovely wife, was like, if you don't apply for that job, I will leave you. So I applied for it and I got it. And
how did you get it? Because somebody, they knew you and they knew you were up for anything and that you had a good personality, or how'd you beat everybody else for that job?
You know, so my friend Andy Hendrickson was the engineer before, and he told me not to take the job. He was like, you should not apply for this job. It's not a good job. And
okay.
He said it wasn't, I don't know if he didn't want me taking, I don't know what his reasoning was, but he told me don't take the job. I applied anyway. And then I got an interview and I talked to the chief engineer for the show, a man named Jeff Tubbs.
Tubbs.
Yeah. And I remember like he asked me, you know, what my experience was. And I told him like what I knew how to do. And then in a moment of weakness, I was like, hey, I got to be honest with you. Like there's certain things I'm not very confident in. And I just want you to know that right off the top. And Tubbs told me, I would rather have someone that is willing to learn everything and knows how to work with people that doesn't know everything versus someone that may know everything and is horrible with people and everybody hates.
That's great from Tubbs. That's a great outlook on things, because you are in the studio with me, Tanya, Sissany, Ryan, John, Para, and a couple of other people all morning. And so, yeah, you need to fit in. That's an important thing. If we don't like the engineer, you're not going to be there very long, because we need somebody that we can hang with.
Exactly. And then, like, when things go wrong and Ryan Seacrest is looking you in the eye going, what's happening? You need to be able to tell him that you're, you know, what's happening and how you're fixing it, not going, boo, mm-hmm. you know, like, so,
right.
that's how I got that job. And then, but engineering wasn't really what I wanted to do. I wanted to be involved with whatever was on, you know, just like everybody. I want to be near the spotlight. I want to be near the mic.
Well, let me sidetrack this for just a second, because Anna Irwin asked a question about how you and I started working together and our first impressions of each other and how our relationship has evolved since. And I don't remember, it's hard to remember my first interactions with you, because we went through a lot of engineers during that period. And so I probably wasn't the friendliest, because it's just another guy standing back there, and who knows if he'll be here in a couple of months. But I don't know. I remember you just made us laugh, and you would probably just say some one-liner that made people laugh. And that's the quickest way to make friends. That's what I remember, is you making everyone in the room laugh, and then you fit in very quickly.
That makes me feel good. Because, like, I mean, I was introduced to you as, that's Mark. He's the executive producer of the show. You got to make sure he's happy. If he needs anything, you got to make it happen. Like, yes. And you're an extremely friendly guy. You're very charismatic. Like, people are drawn to you. So the first day, even if we probably didn't talk, I was like, this is a fun guy to be around.
Well, that's nice, because I've gotten in the past that I could be kind of aloof when I first meet people, because I don't know why that is. Probably because I'm probably so busy and focused on the show that I don't have time to kind of endear myself to you right off the bat. So I have gotten kind of a negative first impression review from people before.
Hey, not with me, though. At least it's fine with me.
So from being an engineer to being the producer of AT40.
Yeah. That I wanted to be a producer really bad. And I was trying my best to let everyone on the show, like, you know, I wanted to work with Ryan too. I love Ryan, mm-hmm. and I love that show so much. And so I anytime like Ryan brought me on the air, I tried to make sure that I like really did a good job.
He liked you from the beginning, because you're funny and you're endearing right away. He liked you. And that's my job, to be able to tell how he feels about people. And he liked you right away.
Like, man, this feels great. So, you know, I just in positions on this show don't open up very often. You know, a lot of people have been there mm-hmm. a really long time. And why would you want to leave? It's the best. But I wanted to make sure when a position did open up, I was ready. Miles Harvey, the executive producer of AT40 at the time, he was moving back to Kentucky. And I was like, oh, I can't, that's AT40. That's a big, I can't do that. I didn't even dream of applying for it. And then the web guy, just by chance, was like, I got to write this dumb thing about J-Lo, but I really want to go get a coffee. And I said, if you get me a coffee, I'll write this thing about J-Lo for you for the website. And then you don't have to do it. And so I wrote it, and he's like, I owe a lot of this to this decision. He's like, I'm going to put your name on this, Easton, because this is good.
Was that Murray?
That was Mark Innocencio, who is...
Oh, Mark Innocencio. I thought it was Michael Murray.
Okay. Oh, no. So I wrote this like blurb. I can't remember what it was. Something about J-Lo. And he put it on the website, and it said by Easton. And then the boss, IM'd me. I'll never forget. I was in the studio with Ryan, and she IM'd me and said, have you thought about being the AT40 producer? And I said, yes, I have. And I would love to. And then that kind of started the process. You know, I had to write a bunch of sample scripts for Ryan, and he had mm-hmm. to approve it and everything. And we had to convince a bunch of people, because that on paper, that sounds very weird. Like, we're going to take our engineer and give him this, like, syndicated show.
Yeah, it is weird. But you and I came at this similarly because I'm the executive producer of this show, and I've never produced a morning show before in my life. So it's similar, without going into that story because that's too long, but it's similar in the sense that when somebody leaves from a big position like that, producer of AT40, executive producer of On Air, the instinct of Ryan and the powers that be at iHeart is, let's scour the planet for the greatest producer who ever lived. And that's not as easy as it sounds, mm-hmm. because people are under contract and people work for companies and people work for talent that wants to keep them and stuff like that. And I've always said that Seacrest experience trumps any other possible experience, meaning if you know him and his rhythms and how he works, it's going to be such a smooth transition where if you bring in somebody from Texas who's never worked with Ryan before, it's going to be bumpy. And that's how I got my job, because I was there, and that's how you got your job, because you were there, and we were ready to go and eager to help.
Exactly. So. All those years of... I've never heard a man speak more than Ryan Seacrest at this point, and all those years of listening to him so closely like came in handy for that moment.
For sure. So, that's the most important thing. Whitney Jones wants to know our favorite and least favorite guests. And I have an answer for this, and I'm going to focus on Seacrest guests because I think these people are more widely known. I mean, there's so many favorites and so many great. Niall Horan couldn't be a nicer guy. It's always so nice when he comes in. Honestly, Jennifer Lopez is so fun when she's in studio, and she just talks to everybody and she swears like a sailor, and it's just great. These are the people that come to mind. Who else is great that comes in all the time? There's a lot of them that we really like, but my least favorite, and you're going to have to help me with their names here. Who's the dude from Riverdale?
KJ Apa?
No, he's fine. He
I know. One of the Sweet Life kids. It's either
Cole
Dylan
Sprouse.
Yeah.
No, Cole Sprouse came in. So, and this ties into scrubbing in. So remember when Tanya was first talking about Starbursts?
Yes.
And the Starburst company sent us two massive jugs of red Starbursts because Tanya was looking for her red Starburst. I'm sure you all remember that. Well, Starburst sent us these massive jugs. Like, there had to be 500 Starbursts in each of these giant jugs. And they were just sitting on the counter. And we would snack from time to time. Well, Cole Sprouse comes in. He sees the Starbursts there. He starts eating Starbursts throughout the entire interview. So he's talking like this while he's talking to Ryan on the radio. And that infuriated me. So Cole Sprouse, I am not a fan of. I am not a fan of Cara Delevingne.
Wow.
Cara Delevingne was like 45 minutes late for interview. And then when she got here, she had a total attitude. So much so that the dude she was with, who I can look up because they were in Paper Towns together because that's what they were promoting.
I'm thinking of... There was another situation that was very similar for a movie called 5 Feet Apart.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a different set of people.
Different set of people, but similar circumstances. Okay, I got it right here. Cara Delevingne and Nat Wolff came in for Paper Towns. She was 45 minutes late. He was on time apologizing for her, and then she was weird and had attitude, and he would kind of jump in to help her answer questions because she was giving one-word answers and she was terrible. 5 Feet Apart, I think, was a similar situation.
Patrick Schwarzenegger and Bella Thorne.
He was on time. Bella Thorne was late and then weird when she got here. So, yes, similar situation. So those three are my ones that I don't ever need to see on the morning show again.
Wow. I remember that Cole Sprouse day very well. And I would have to agree that was like infuriating to watch.
Yeah, that was really maddening. And then we had to ban the Starburst from the studio. We could no longer have Starburst in the studio because that can never happen again.
Yeah, that was horrible. I loved eating those Starbursts. You know, my favorite guest, I got to say, it's I loved being able to talk to Hillary Duff here on this podcast. That was a thrill, something I've wanted to do. And I'm picking these people very selfishly because I got to speak to them personally. So Hillary Duff on the Scrubbing In podcast, that was a thrill. And then Chris Evans on the morning show with Ryan. Ryan let me talk to Chris Evans on the phone, and I got to just gush and be a fan. And he was so nice about it. And I listened to that like once a month. It was that conversation. And it was so
much
fun.
He was on my list at one point. He came in one time when they were shooting the first Avengers movie and proceeded to complain to Ryan off the air about how difficult it was doing this superhero movie in New Mexico. Like, oh, man, these hours. And, oh, you know, like, you got to be kidding me, dude. But honestly, he's been on a bunch of times since then. He's been awesome. So I rescind my feelings about him. He's actually been really great. And that's actually what Casey Vanderzeel Brannon wanted to know, who we fangirled over the years. So you mentioned Hillary and Chris Evans. For me, having Elton John in the studio was amazing. Yes, I'm older than all of us. But Elton John in studio was one of those moments where you were like, how the hell has my life gone that I am now standing in a room with Elton John? You know, as a kid from Madison, Wisconsin, who would lay in the back of the van on the family trip to Yellowstone in 1981 when I was a kid, listening to Elton John's greatest hits and Madman Across the Water on my Sony Walkman. And here I am standing in a room with really just me, Ryan, and Elton John. Like, how did this happen? It was just one of those moments, and those moments are kind of neat.
I had that moment when they brought in the Victoria's Secret Swarovski crystal underwear. I'm in the same room with this $1 million bra and panties. How did this happen?
Deborah Graham wants to know, what's our favorite podcast to work on?
I get this question so much. I can't pick. They're like my children. How can you pick a favorite child?
And they're all really great. I love Ben and Ashley. I love Jared and Dean. I love Jana and Mike. Like, they're all really great people. So it's hard to say. I mean, I would say Scrubbing In, just because we're more involved. Tanya and Becca are so fun. This one was not the first one we started doing, but, you know, the second one we started doing. So we've been doing it for a long time. So, you know, I would say Scrubbing In, but there's a lot of really fun shows.
Yeah. They're all fun for different reasons. But I mean, yeah, I guess Scrubbing In is like the most fun.
Okay, let's end with this one. Jennifer Hudgens wants to know the thing that we love about Becca and Tanya the most, and the thing that annoys us or frustrates us about Becca and Tanya the most. And somebody else asked our first impressions of those two, so it's a similar kind of a question. But, I mean, you know, Tanya, here's how I'll answer both questions with Tanya. Tanya is sunshine. I've said that before. But there are times when we've all been there. You first wake up in the morning and somebody opens the window and the sun shines in. You're not really in the mood for sunshine at that point. Or the sun's just a little bright in your eyes. So a lot of the times, Tanya's sunshine is wonderful and warming and welcoming. But sometimes you're like, oh, can you just dim it down just a little bit? I don't need sunshine right now. And Becca, I mean, Becca, from the day we met her, was incredibly warm and friendly. She's a hugger, which is very nice. Of course, that's on hold these days. But I think that says a lot about a person. And she just couldn't have been nicer and friendlier. And while I don't know why I expected her to be more of... I expected more of a diva for some reason. Maybe it's just because I knew she had been on TV and she's so stunning. Like, I thought that she's going to be, have more of an attitude. And there was none of that ever from day one. My pet peeve about her is that she's not on time a lot. And as a producer, I really preferred things to run on time.
Yeah. That's my pet peeve with Becca too. Because especially these days, that the remote podcasting requires so much preparation at the very beginning. And a lot of times we don't have time to do that because we're starting 15 minutes late. But yeah, they're the best. The first time I met both of them, it was just so, they're both so friendly and so outgoing, and they make you feel so comfortable. It's unlike anything else. I guess my biggest pet peeve about Tanya, this is from when I was the main engineer. Tanya's not good with technical stuff, and she doesn't have to be. That's okay. But I spent a lot of time fixing her email and stuff like that when I first started with Ryan. I spent so many hours fixing her laptop. I don't know how she does this stuff to it, but anyway, that was my pet peeve with her.
All right. There we go. I'm sure those will get back to the girls, and let's talk about those in the new year. All right. Coming up next, we have coaxed our wives to join us, Allison and Amy, on the podcast for the first time ever, coming up next.
All right, we're back. I've always wanted to do that. I hear the girls bring us back in, and I'm just chomping at the bit to do it myself. You know, it's the Mark and Easton show here on Scrubbing In, and this is a segment we've been really excited about. And I know the listeners are really excited about it, too. We're going to bring on some very special guests here. Sitting next to me is my lovely wife, Allison.
Hi.
And sitting next to you, Mark, is your lovely wife, Amy.
Hello.
this is kind of, my wife is as excited about this as like a root canal. Kind of like, let me just get this over with. And I've mentioned this before because we've been asked many times to have our wives on the show. And I was explaining, it's just not my wife's thing. Like, she's not interested. She doesn't want to be on camera, on mic, any of that stuff. Is that fair to say?
That's very fair to say.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very different for each. I mean, I think Allison's the same way. She doesn't like being in front of people.
I felt like I was going to give like a book report on something I hadn't read yet for the last 3 days. I was so nervous.
Yeah, that, I just found out the questions a minute ago.
I don't even know those. You're doing better than me.
Oh, well, sorry.
You know, but it's very different from you and I, Mark, because I mean, if I didn't have a microphone in front of me, I would shrivel up and die. That's the only thing I was put on.
I've been pretending to do a radio show since I was 6 years old.
Same.
So yeah, it's a different situation. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we ask my wife her questions?
Let's do it.
You can interrogate her, and then we'll break, and I'll interrogate Allison, and then that'll be that, okay?
Sounds good.
And we'll make this as quick and painless as possible.
Amy, this will be fun. I haven't seen you since our wedding, but I think this will be a really good time. All right, this is what people want to know. What was your first impression of Mark?
He's, you know, very outgoing, and he was kind of like an interviewer at the very start.
I mean, that sounds like it makes things most comfortable. What was it like dating him? Was he like cracking dad jokes and things like that?
That's my reputation now, as Mr. Dad Joke.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I call them dad jokes. They were corny jokes. Yeah, always.
They're corny jokes till you have kids, and then they're dad jokes.
Yeah, okay. I suppose. So yeah, that's been his personality for all.
Did he have any game at all? Did he use any pickup lines on you?
Oh God, no. No, I don't think you did.
Well, that first night, and we've mentioned this story before, I was at the Wisconsin State Fair, and I was doing a live broadcast, once again, with the microphone in front of me, and she and her friends came up to request a song, and that's the first meeting. And I felt like I was kind of smooth, because she had a boyfriend, and I said to her, like, if you did, that's too bad that you have a boyfriend, because I really would like to ask for your number, or something like that.
Okay.
That's kind of smooth,
that
isn't it?
That is a pickup line,
no,
though.
That's not a pickup line, no. Not a traditional
like
one.
Yeah.
I like Mark answering the questions for Amy.
Yeah. It works for me.
Well, when did you know that Mark was the one?
Oh, probably. I mean, I feel like it was early on, but you question that, you know, and he was planning on moving to California and I was not. So I think it was after he moved and my life kind of felt like it ended. I think that's when I knew.
Oh, well, who said I love you first?
I honestly don't remember. That was like 23 years ago.
It was. I think it was you, but I kind of coaxed you into doing it.
Sounds about right.
Like, I feel like you were alluding to wanting to say something and weren't sure how it was going to go over, but I knew it was going to go over really well. So I kind of coaxed you into saying it, knowing that I would receive it properly. Does that ring a bell? I picture us sitting on the floor of my bedroom in my apartment in Wauwatosa.
That sounds about right, but I honestly don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another big moment in any relationship. Walk us through the proposal. Was it everything you dreamt of? How did he do it?
You know, I didn't really have dreams of that. I'm not one of those. Yeah, no, I never. Because then if you have a dream of how it's going to go in your mind, you're going to be disappointed. So I never really thought about it that much. He was definitely weird and nervous and he had to, like, you could just tell he was on edge. So I knew something was wrong. And then when he started crying, I thought something was really wrong. So it wasn't, I guess it wasn't until I saw The Ring that I realized that what was happening.
He cried?
Oh, definitely. Between us, he's the crier in the relationship.
Yeah. We were in San Simeon on the beach across from Hearst Castle, and watching the sunset. But she could tell that my insistence that we find a sunset was
Well, flag. I think we tried like three different spots. And yeah. I was like, what's wrong with this one? And he gets me back in the car, and away we go again. And so, yeah, he was on edge that night.
But yeah, I was crying so hard I could barely speak. And so she was concerned I had really bad news for her.
I don't know. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew he was on edge.
There's no better improv game than man trying to propose. That's something I love. So I just learned this myself, actually, that Mark is a horrible snorer. How did you
learn that, Easton?
Well, we spent the night together. But you know, Mark opened up about it on the podcast. And
on the wind down podcast.
Oh, that's, they all blend together. They're the same. Yeah. How did you react when you discovered this for yourself?
Well, you know, I used to be a very hard sleeper, like out. So I never thought much about it until we had kids. And then when we had kids, I'm the lightest sleeper in the world right now. So now his snoring makes me crazy. But before, when we were younger and dating, it didn't bother me. So keep that in mind, ladies.
And as I mentioned on Wind Down, I've had numerous procedures done to my sinus cavities, and it still has not done the trick, including a deviated septum repair, a balloon procedure? A balloon procedure where they stick balloons up your nose and inflate them to expand your sinuses.
It's better. His breathing is definitely better. Like daytime breathing, like even then, he was never able to breathe through his nose. He was only a mouth breather. So that's gotten better. And the snoring, probably a little better, but I just am such a light sleeper that...
And the ENT said to me, he said, the only other thing we can do is shave down your uvula, and I do not recommend it. That's what he said. And so I don't think we can do that.
The uvula is, as Cardi B would put it, the little dangly thing that hangs at the back of your throat, right?
That is correct.
That's right.
And they shave it down, and then you can't eat anything but ice cream or something for weeks.
That doesn't sound bad.
Okay, Amy, I got one more question for you, and then I will release you back to your life. What makes Mark the best dad?
Well, he's a child still, so that helps when you're playing. Uh-huh. Like he was the player always. Like he can, he's a good improver, and so making little scenes with the little dolls in the dollhouse was something that came naturally to him. When the girls were young, he was always on the floor playing with them. And that's, I think, like the fact that he never fully grew up helps him be a wonderful dad.
Oh, that just warms my heart. Well, thank you so much, Amy, for taking time out of your day and hanging out with us here on the Scroving In podcast.
Was that so bad?
You're welcome.
Was it terrible?
No, Are you guys dying without Disneyland? I think about you with Disneyland being shut.
It's actually been a welcome change for me, at least.
I've been slowly descending into madness, but that's a little game I'm enjoying right up here and here alone.
Okay.
I do catch Easton just staring at the map on the app all the time. Like he'll just launch the phone app and pretend he's like walking through the park, I guess, like in his own little world. It's very disturbing.
I just want to see if they changed anything on the app.
Oh, well, I hope it opens quickly for you guys.
Thank you for your sympathy.
All right. Allison, your turn. Yay.
Thanks. Bye, Amy.
All right, Allison, here we go. Let's see. Now, you have a different situation than we had in the sense that you guys were friends for a long time before dating. So how is it? Because it is a challenge. Leaving the friend zone is not easy. How did Easton get out of the friend zone?
So I actually really had a huge crush on Easton from the time I met him. And we hooked up when we were 18, but it didn't really work out. And I thought Easton wasn't interested. And then he never returned my text message the next day, so I was sure he wasn't interested. So I just ignored it for the next 10 years. And then we both so I thought I was in the friend zone. So then we both moved to LA within a month of each other. And I was like, oh, how great, this friend I've had, we can reconnect. And then we kind of started hooking up. And then one day we realized we were basically dating. So it just happened. But it took 11 years, I guess. Easton has a different version. He claims he didn't get the text and that he had a migraine. So I'll let him do that for his interview.
Well, I had a sidekick on a T-Mobile plan, and anyone who was using one of those in 2006 knows that they would drop text messages all the time. I didn't get the text. I didn't hear from her. I should have probably reached out, but, you know, I was a nervous person. So I thought that she didn't have a good time, and we just let that fester for a decade.
Wow. I mean, it's kind of sad. You missed out on a lot of time together.
But I think if we'd started dating when we were like 18, we would not be together still. I feel like we're very different people. And I don't know. I think it worked out. I think it worked out in the end. I think we would have broken up after like 6 months.
I think so. I personally had a lot of growing up to do in that time.
Well, on that note, Easton, I guess the question is, what's the most embarrassing thing that Easton has done? How has he embarrassed you the most? Because between the outfits and the clogs and the Crocs, I mean, and I'm guessing there's some embarrassment involved.
You know, those things don't bother me. I actually really like that Easton is just, he's so Easton. He's so himself, and he's never embarrassed of the things he's interested in, even though everyone else likes to make fun of him for it. But I actually find that a very appealing quality. But I most recently, Easton's very stubborn, and we spent an entire walk home from walking our dog with him trying to convince me that the word mortified meant really scared. And even though I'm an English major with a much better vocabulary, he would not listen to me when I tried to correct him on the definition. So that's, I've been making fun of him that for, he's mortified about it now.
Yes. So that's the correct use. I am mortified about how wrong I had that word.
And you chose that as your hill to die on. That's the other funny thing. You just like defer to the English major on that. Who said I love you first between you two?
I did, and I was so embarrassed because it was when we were in that weird in limbo phase, and Easton had just lost one of his close friends, and I just sort of reflexively said, oh, I love you on the phone. And then I thought, shoot, that was weird to say. Like, we're not even we're kind of dating, but we're not. I was like, I was mortified. And I think it was like another year before we actually, I think we were dating when we said it again, but I don't remember who said it first. I just remember that first time and being like embarrassed about the, I wasn't even thinking, I just was sort of saying it as a friend. And then I thought, oh, that's weird. Like Easton just didn't say anything back and we hung up the phone.
It feels like we've always been saying it. That's how I like to think of it. I don't remember the first time. I don't remember the most recent time, so.
But you remember everyone in between.
That's right, baby.
You guys seem like such a happy couple. Do you ever fight?
We constantly bicker. We don't have huge fights, so we definitely fight. But we're both really stubborn. We bicker all the time, especially with like our home renovation. We live in a 110-year-old house that we're trying to slowly restore, and we constantly are bickering about how to do it. But I think that, at least for me, I feel like that's brought me closer together because it's really made me work on my communication skills and that maybe I'm not always right, even though I think I always am. So I think that's been good for me.
Okay. All right. I thought Easton was going to chime in.
Yeah, I was waiting too.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about how through these little bickers, I have learned what things to drop. I think this is something that is uniquely male, which is like the weird instinct to correct people who didn't ask for it. And there's times where we'll be talking about something and I'll have remembered a different version, or there's some weird detail. And I'm realizing as I get older, none of these things matter. And
yeah,
you know,
that's a guy thing, and I'm with you on that, because the instinct to mansplain is strong, and I appreciate social media for calling out mansplaining, because I'm way more aware of it now. Just last night, a woman I used to work with tweeted about the rain in LA, because we got a ton of rain in LA last night. She goes, oh, first rain in the new house, and I was like, uh-oh, look out for leaks or something like that, and then she wrote back oh, I know, I'm really going to be careful. And then I started to write back but it's not just drops. You also have to look for stains, and you also have to look for in the carpet, in the corners. And I was like, stop, what are you doing? Why do you feel the need to do that?
There's so many times where we're trying to figure something out, and then I suggest it, and then 30 seconds later, Easton just rephrases the same thing I said. I'm like, what? But I think he's noticing it. Like yesterday, he even said, oh, wait, that's exactly what you said. But, it's a slow, humbling process for both of us.
The fix for that as a man is he's saying, well, yes, I was just reiterating it because it was such a good idea.
Okay, what is your biggest pet peeve about Easton?
I feel like I've said this on this podcast before, but when I'm talking and then Easton has a bit or like a joke, and then I can just tell he's just waiting for me to finish the sentence. He does this thing, he like licks his lips and he's just like staring off in his face and he's just waiting for me to stop talking to say a stupid joke, and it drives me crazy.
That does ring a bell, and yeah. It also rings true, I feel like. I feel like I've been in that position so many times.
I think that goes hand in hand with the mansplaining. They're on the same Venn diagram.
Yeah, probably. When did you know that Easton was the one?
You know, like, I honestly wasn't sure even after he proposed to me. Just because
wow.
I mean, that's so scary to think, like, oh, I'm hopefully going to spend the rest of my life with this person, but it's just one person. And I was really scared. And for me, my dad passed away 2 weeks after Easton proposed, and Easton was so good with handling the entire situation. And I realized like that he was the one just for how he responded when things weren't going well. And I think it's easy for people to get along when things are okay, but when there's a problem, you really see like the person's true self. And Easton was so much more mature and put together than he is 99% of the time when I actually need him to be. So for me, that was when I was sure of it.
And were you guys on the, and this came up a couple of different places, and I know Nicole McQuarrie asked about this on the Facebook page, the whole not having kids thing. Where are you guys on that right now?
Definitely still not. If it happened, I wouldn't be upset about it, but we're not actively trying and we don't have plans to. I have endometriosis, so I was told I would have to do IVF a few years ago. So it was something we talked about before we were married, but I'm still waiting. Like, do you guys ever have that feeling where you're like, okay, I know I definitely want kids now. Like, did you wake up one day and know you wanted them? Because I've never had that happen.
We never didn't want them. We knew from the beginning that we wanted them. We knew we wanted two. Like, it was always, we were always very much on the same page. And it seems like you guys are too. But it was never a question for us, I guess.
I guess so. I feel like my mind is going to be changed someday. And I don't think that actually happens. So I feel like it's just not going to happen. Nope. But we're both, at least I'm open to adoption. I know we've kind of talked about it a little bit, like maybe later down the line. But as of right now, not something we're actively pursuing.
We talked about, we watched a lot of Christmas movies, you know, over the last couple of weeks. And we're Kevin McAllister from Home Alone, like, that, got us like excited about it.
If I could have a Kevin, like guaranteed Kevin, I would have
a kid. Like a kid that can build booby traps and like be left alone for a long time, multiple times, great. Something like that. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the IVF element is interesting because that means you got to really want it.
Right.
Because it's going to be really expensive and really time consuming and a lot of stress and with no guarantees. So yeah, I understand the hesitation there and how that would add to your decision.
I could adopt a lot of dogs for the price of one IVF treatment. So just see how it goes, I guess.
Guess so. Well, thank you. Those are the questions that we have for you.
Thank you. This was so fun. It's finally my time to shine after watching Easton be the star for so long.
you did great.
Did you get the sense from Amy that she couldn't get out of there fast enough? Because
yeah, I just saw a cloud of smoke where her silhouette used to be.
Exactly. That is exactly right. All right, we have a couple of emails here before we wrap it up and send this out to all the different podcast companies as a pilot for our new show, The Easton and Mark Show. Samantha says, I just got engaged after 10 years of dating. Wow. We met in high school, so he's prepared for the following. My mother's extremely overbearing. I've dealt with it my whole life. And now that I've started wedding planning, she's over the moon excited, but already inserting herself in very unhealthy ways to help me plan. How do I keep my sanity while also getting my mom to back off a bit? I want her involved, but I know asking her to back off will make her shut down and not want to be involved at all.
Oh, man. I mean, I really... I know that she says, like, if I bring it up, she's going to shut down. But I really think communication is the key here, especially when you're going through something that's that big of a deal. I think you got to make it clear, like, hey, I want you involved with this part of my life. This is a very big deal. But also you have to remember this is my wedding. And there's certain things that there's certain decisions I'm going to make that you may not agree with, and you got to get used to it. And I know it's easier said than done, but I think that's what you got to do.
This could be terrible advice, but would this work? What if you established parameters right away? Like, what if you took all the duties of the wedding and you made a big list and you assigned some to your mother and some to your future mother-in-law and some to yourself and some to your fiance, and you basically divided it up. And then you said to your mom, here, mom, here's what you're in charge of. And you're going to, and I can't wait for how you're going to do it. You're going to be so great at this. But you are doing flowers, you are doing alcohol at the reception, you are doing, you're booking the venue, whatever it is. Is that a way to do it, maybe?
I think that's a good idea.
And then she knows, and then you don't have to, like, tis the season of parents pouting, especially since a lot of us didn't go back to see our parents for Christmas, and, like, my mother-in-law refused to put up her Christmas tree in protest of us not going to Wisconsin this year.
Wow. The war on Christmas wages on.
Yeah. I'm thinking she might pout a little bit, but I think she'll pout less if you're giving her marching orders rather than saying, you're saying do this instead of saying don't do this.
That's the right perspective. That's the way you should look at it.
I hope so. But good luck to both of you.
Yeah.
And good luck once you start having kids. All right, Alexis says, I met a guy through a mutual friend a few months ago, became friends, and a couple months later decided to start dating. He checked off everything on my list, but I had an unsettling feeling, so I randomly Googled him the other night. Turns out he's a felon with multiple charges.
All right.
I brought it up to him, and I ended things after realizing he clearly lied to me about most of his background / life and is clearly a manipulator. Am I naive, or have we come to a day and age we have to run background checks on guys we date? This situation affected the way I trust men drastically. Any advice? Alexis, that's great. This is all positive. This is all upside. Yes, you should do background checks on all the guys you date. Yes, you should not trust men. Yes, this is all. I know this has changed your worldview, but you had to have your eyes opened at one point or another. Mm. Glad that it happened with no damage done. I think this is all positive.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. Her email does kind of sound like the beginning of a Carrie Bradshaw column. Do I have to run a background check on the man I'm dating? But yeah, I agree. You know, because if it's the right guy, nothing will come up, and then you'll be fine. But it's the only way to prevent further problems and heartbreak.
And I think 95% of the time, nothing is going to come up.
You know, I'm not saying you have to keep a PI on retainer for every time you go on a Hinge date, but. At least give them a cursory Google.
I'm surprised you're questioning this, because you should be saying, thank God I checked him. And yes, I'm going to check every guy, because these are extreme circumstances that he's a felon. And I don't know, who knows what those charges were, but can't be good. So I think this is all upside. And there's no harm in running Google checks on future boyfriends, because you probably find nothing. You might find something misleading. I guess that's the danger, right? As you find out he dated somebody, I'm not sure why a guy would show up on Google. He dated somebody with some notoriety. And that may put stuff in your head that doesn't need to be there. So maybe that's a reason not to. But I think I'd at least find out if they're a felon.
What if you find some like questionable social media post from like 10 years earlier? Like,
ooh, that's a good question.
You know, because it's a good chance they've changed since then. But also it's out there. If you Google it, it's out there.
It's true. Like racist stuff, like that sort of thing. Yeah. Because that's happened to a lot of professional athletes who say that I'm not that person anymore. That was 10 years ago. Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I mean, everyone's got a line somewhere, but mm-hmm. we all did stupid stuff when we were in high school, too. So I guess you got to take it case by case.
Yep.
All right. And before we wrap it up here, a couple other Facebook questions. Bronwyn Dunlop wanted to hear about my parenting style. I don't know. It was a lot easier when they were little, and all I had to do was what my wife talked about, is get down on the ground and play dollhouse with them. And that was easy. And we did that for hours and hours and hours. But nowadays, they're doing their own thing. And my instinct is to kind of let them do their own thing with some oversight. You know, you just kind of got to keep track of what they're up to. But I'm a little more hands off. And Lisa Sakota asked about advice I would give my younger self about parenting. And I would say, you got to find the patience. You got to find a way. And that's something I've gotten better at over the years, and I wasn't great at to begin with. You've got to find a way to find patience before you lose your temper. You just got to do it. If it's breathing, a mantra, walk away. you got to figure it out, because it's just, life's a lot easier if you could figure out patience with kids, and it is not easy. Bronwyn also asks Easton, and this was very sweet, I thought. I want to know what Easton loved about his childhood and how his parents were, because if my three-year-old boy can be as genuine and kind and fun as Easton is, I would be a winner. Isn't that sweet?
That's very sweet. That's very sweet. You know, I had a great childhood, and my parents encouraged me to be myself and love who I was and love who other people are. And that was, that's something that I think about a lot. And I never struggled with any confidence issues in that regard growing up as a result. And I'm grateful for their parenting for that very reason. But before we wrap this up, just very quickly, I did want to say, I got a lot of messages of people asking for an update on my friend Jordan and my friend Chris. And I just wanted to give a quick update on how they're doing. I want to thank everybody. We did a GoFundMe to raise money for their medical expenses, which are growing by the day. And a lot of scrubbers donated a lot of money. And I really, really appreciate that, because that's just so, so helpful. And anyone who sent nice messages and words, that was so great. Jordan is back home now. She is awake, but she is her brain activity is very, very low. She can communicate. They have like a little button thing that she can click. And the thing that's really incredible is, like, her favorite show is Friends. They play a Friends episode and you go, do you like this one? Click yes for yes and click once for no. And she'll click yes. And then she'll say, no, I hate this episode. And so she's aware of what's going on to a certain extent, but she's not speaking.
And just to recap, she was carrying boxes and tripped over another box and fell.
Yeah, it was my friend Chris and Jordan. They live in Chicago. They were moving into their first house together. They got married a year or two ago, and they're moving into their house. She's carrying boxes. She stepped into a pothole and twisted her ankle, she broke her ankle. They had to go to the hospital and have surgery done. And during the operation, she went into cardiac arrest and went into a coma for a couple weeks before she was able to, like, really react to things and, like, open her eyes and stuff like that. So it's going to be a really, really long road to, we don't know what recovery looks like, you know, it's anything's possible, but it's kind of looking like a really long way before she can speak or, like, you know, move her arms and things like that. But, you know, Chris has a good support system, and, they've got all the equipment in his house now, and he's getting trained by, rehab therapists and stuff like that. So this has been a really hard year for a lot of people, and he's having a really hard time this holiday season, and I really appreciate everybody sending the nice words because he really needs it. But that's where we're at with them, and we appreciate everyone's ongoing good vibes, because Chris and Jordan really need that right now.
Is it fair to say she's already come a lot farther than it was maybe expected?
Yes, definitely, definitely. And thankfully, they were able to get her in. One of the top rehab centers, like, in the country is in Chicago, where they live. So they were able to get her in there for a number of months before bringing her home. And I think that care really helped her along in a way that wouldn't have happened otherwise. We don't know what to expect, but the progress she's made is very encouraging so far.
Wow.
So, thank you all for that. And then to slightly pivot to something much more trivial, I did want to invite everybody to the Eastie Awards.
This is a big deal.
I do an award show on Instagram Live every New Year's Day. I've been doing it for like 5 years or something on a live stream. And this one's going down New Year's Day on my Instagram at 3 p.m. Pacific time. That's 6 p.m. Eastern. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And maybe some of your favorite podcast personalities will show up along the way.
And some of the categories, actor that pleased Easton most, actress that pleased Easton most. What are some other categories this year?
The thing about the categories is I change them every year. There's some mainstays like Fruit of the Year, Best Song, stuff like that. But this year we're also looking at Potato of the Year, Best Stovetop Burner, Best Fictional Butler. These are things that...
What are the nominees for Best Stovetop Burner, if you don't mind?
Well, it's been a big year for all of them, but the nominees are Front Right, Rear Right, Front Left, and Rear Left.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's a great list of nominees.
A tight race, but only one of them can take home the gold knee ticket, and that's going down New Year's Day, 3 p.m. Don't miss the Eastie Awards, baby.
Oh, I do enjoy the Eastie Awards. That'll be great. And the goal is next year it's going to be at some sort of arena with an audience.
You know, I actually, the other day I had a thought. Is anyone doing public access anymore? Is that available?
That's a good question. I have no idea.
Because someone left a comment saying, this better be on network television by 2030. And I thought, I can get this on television next year, probably. So
I don't even know if that's a thing anymore, public access television, Wayne's World.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe in the future, who knows? But this year it's going to be a remote broadcast like every other award show.
All right, good. Well, that'll be great. Hey, thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening to us yammer on for an hour. We appreciate that. That was very kind of you, especially if you've made it this far. January 4th, they're back. Tanya, Becca. We'll be there too.
Yep.
2021 is upon us and a brand new year of scrubbing in with Becca Tilley and Tanya Rad. Until then, thanks for listening. Happy New Year. We love you.
Bye.